it's time for Dr. René Boyce to bring you the Better Health Radio Show. Good evening, Doc. She has a guest with her, by the way. Good evening.
Good evening, Gregson. How are you?
I am good, thank you. What about yourself?
I'm fine. I'm saying only nice things. I heard you earlier.
That's to my face. No, but anyhow, carry on smartly.
Yes, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. If you wish to give us a call in studio, the number to reach us at is 434-1790. And if you want to send us a WhatsApp, 266-4862. So 434-1790 and 266-4862. I do have a guest in studio this evening. This is going to be another interesting program for several reasons. Dr. Makeba Brooks, how are you, Makeba?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Is that the truth?
Not quite.
No, it's not the truth. You might hear a little bit of coughing and sneezing going on in the studio. I was telling somebody just the other week of an experience I had where it was Sunday before. It must have been Sunday before. Remember when I was in studio, Gregson, I was saying that my throat was feeling a little.
Yes, yes, that's true. That's true. What was it?
Whatever it was threatened to take my life. That is what I'm going to say. I was supposed to be, you know, spending a little time, you know, enjoying time with the children, and I spent 2 days under the covers, unable to help myself. Just from that one burning sore
throat.
We're
happy to have you back here.
Yes, I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be back. So, and the other thing that I must do, I'm going to send a shout out to Wendy. I met Wendy at a luncheon 2 weeks ago. And she is an avid listener of the program. So I hope you're listening this evening. Shout out to Wendy.
Wait a minute. Should I ask you for your autograph now before, you know, because when you get huge,
I will remember the little people.
Ah, wonderful.
So we are going to, Makeba, you tell us, what type of physician are you?
Okay, so good afternoon, everybody. I am a specialist emergency physician. My specialty is emergency medicine. In emergency medicine, that would be the specialist that you would see in urgent care centers and also in the accident and emergency department.
Accident and emergency department. No, Gregston knows everybody in Barbados by now knows the specialty of medicine that I did not like.
Don't tell me, I'll guess. Obstetrics and gynecology.
Yes, I didn't like that one. Mm. But I enjoyed accident and emergency.
Really?
I did. I enjoyed accident and emergency. However, the reason I didn't choose accident and emergency as a career is it's fast-paced. I'm the type that will sit down and ask you what color cereal you had for breakfast. And clearly, you know, those are not the things that go on in accident and emergency. And I think I always had this fear. It really wasn't a valid fear, per se, that I would send home somebody with the wrong diagnosis. Yes, you know. Yes. So I was like, you know what? Let me leave that to the specialist like Makeba. So we are going to talk about when to worry. But we want to know a little bit more about Makeba. You know, what do you do for fun? Tell us about your family.
Well, okay, I'm a mother of two. I have a 7-year-old daughter, Kimiko, and a 4-year-old son, Kenzo. For fun, I dance, I read a lot, and I don't have much spare time, though. Two children, they keep you busy, and a practice, it keeps you pretty busy. But in emergency medicine, we are so-called the adrenaline junkies of medicine. So we're the ones that thrive on the unexpected and the unknown.
You
never know what's
going
to come through the door. And then, you know, it might be go from calm 1 minute to just crazy in a couple seconds.
No, are you going to say the same thing, Gregson?
No, you go ahead. You'll say what you're going to say. Go ahead.
I wonder if we're going to say the same thing, because Makeba is sitting down here with this glow on her face and one big smile.
I was going to say something about excitement.
I will see exactly the same thing that I'm saying, because I'm thinking, if I were in the emergency department, please don't let anybody come in here with a heart attack tonight. Please do not let anybody come in here with a gunshot wound tonight. And Makeba would be like, what next?
Great. Challenge coming.
Exactly.
To each his own. Mm. So let's start with the little ones, the babies. When should we worry about babies?
Okay, so let's start from newborns. So you come home, you have a newborn. The one thing you must know that is a huge warning sign for a newborn baby is a fever. So,
and let's define fever.
Right. So actually, I mean, fever is defined as a temperature an air temperature or an internal temperature. The closest we can get to that is an air temperature, which is you have a thermometer that actually has a probe that goes into your ear. It's very safe. It sounds scary, I know, but it's very safe. Or you can do a rectal temperature with a thermometer that goes into the rectum. That also sounds scary, and a lot of parents are like, you know, I will definitely never put a thermometer into my baby's bum, but that also is quite safe. The thermometers have like a shelf, so they can't go, you can't possibly push it too far. It's not like the normal thermometer that we used to see with the mercury in it that would go under our arms.
Oh, and then the thermometer is all up by the liver.
Right, not those anymore. They're all digital thermometers now. So the temperature, fever would be defined as a temperature greater than 37.5 degrees. But really what the evidence has shown is that parents are actually pretty good in telling when a child has a fever by just touching the child. You feel your child all the time. You, although people, especially physicians too, tend to discredit parents when they say,
that's true,
the temperature, the child felt warm to me, or I think my baby has a fever. And you say, well, did you measure it? And the parent says, no, I didn't have a thermometer. And everybody goes, oh gosh, what do you know? You know, it's probably not. But actually, evidence does show, and they've done several studies on this, that parents actually and caregivers are actually very, very good at determining a fever.
I think one of the things that I've learned over the years, and Makiba and I were in the same class in medical school, one of the things that I learned over the years is that parents and patients themselves know that something is wrong with them.
Yeah.
It's up to us as physicians to ask the right questions and to take what they say seriously.
Yes.
They and I, like Makiba, I have two children. My daughter eats us out of house and land. And I jokingly tell people, the day she stops eating, I am going to present to accident and emergency. Because I, as her mother, will know that there is something wrong with her. So fever in newborn babies, what else would we look out for in those little ones?
So in the little ones, things like persistent vomiting or projectile vomiting. By projectile, we mean vomiting that's, I don't want to say propulsive. People would say that, you know, it shoots across the room or it shoots far across. Now, what you can notice with some very young infants, they tend to spit up a lot, some of them. They tend to, if you burp them, they might then vomit a little bit. And sometimes the vomitus seems a little forceful, but projectile vomiting tends to be quite different. So it's the vomit that shoots out pretty far away and, you know, usually after a feed, and that's worrisome.
Okay, so you can't, and I don't think that you can really miss projectile vomiting either. It's one of those
different
things. Yeah, one of those things if you see it.
You know, so you know it's different from the normal vomiting that you've seen before.
It's normal vomiting and abnormal vomiting.
Yes.
Yeah, vomiting in most regards is abnormal, but this is extra not normal vomiting.
Right.
So we talked about fever in newborn. We also talked about projectile vomiting.
Or persistent vomiting. Because some babies actually do have reflux.
Okay.
And should not be put to lie down after a feed. They sometimes actually have to be propped up. Some babies, when the reflux is really bad, they actually have to sleep in a car seat where they're actually in an almost seated position. So, but those are things, recommendations that would be given to you from your physician. So should you see something that is strange, take the baby to the doctor and get it checked out.
All right, so where are we going to go next? Anything more for the little babies, or we want to move a step up for the older child?
We could move a step up. Actually, now that we're speaking about vomiting, we probably could talk about vomiting now. Or all things GI?
No, hold on. My sister says she doesn't understand how I've become a doctor because I'm one of the most, this is her opinion, not mine, scornful people that she has ever met. But the nurses over time have learned that I don't do vomit.
I don't do pus.
And I cannot do suction.
Yeah.
Oh, see? So it's not just me. I remember once they brought in this lady in accident and emergency, and they had to suction the lady. And I had to tell the EMTs, all right, y'all suction her, I'll be back. Because if anything, they would have to pick me up off the ground in there.
Right.
So vomiting. Vomiting is actually the body's way of trying to remove a foreign substance, an infectious substance, from the gastrointestinal tract, the gut.
Yeah, but also can be caused, as we know, from a lot of other things.
Many other things.
So remember, you can have severe head trauma and have vomiting as a result of that. You can have, so raised, you know, you have a bleed in your brain, and the only thing you might present with is headache and vomiting. And it has actually nothing to do with your gut at all, nothing to do with the food that you ate from the side of the road last night. It's really something in your head.
Literally.
So in terms of vomiting, vomiting that's associated with head trauma, that's worrisome. Vomiting that is persistent and you're unable to keep anything down, that's a problem also. If you're vomiting blood, as much as you might think that it would be a red flag for most people, there are several people that will see that and just pass it over.
About 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago, Makiba, somebody came to the office and they were vomiting blood for 3 days.
Yeah.
How can you vomit blood for 3 days and not go to the emergency department? I don't know.
Yeah, and now that we're talking about that, patients often don't understand why we ask the what seems to them as silly questions that we ask.
So that is so
somebody
true.
Would say, I vomited blood, and we say, what color is it? And the person looks at you like, what color is blood? Like, aren't you supposed to be a doctor? Aren't you supposed to be smart?
Yes.
What do you mean, what color was it? But as we know, blood can be different colors. So you can have bright red blood, or you can have especially blood coming from the stomach. It can actually be black or just look like coffee grounds.
And that makes a difference in your diagnosis.
It's a big difference.
Yes, completely different things causing the bleeding there.
Exactly.
So protracted vomiting. You're vomiting, can't keep anything down. And the other thing that vomiting in pregnancy is a thing that happens because of the hormones, and it's supposed to have been, from my research way back when, a protective mechanism, morning sickness, so that women back in the cave times, yes, I'm serious, so that they wouldn't eat any poisonous berries because the scent would make them feel upset and so on, so they would know to avoid this. This is what the people said was the cause for morning sickness. I don't know. I was not pleased about all day sickness, as I termed it. But even those ladies who are pregnant, who are vomiting all the time, there's several of them who think, oh, well, this is just normal in pregnancy.
Right. And it's not.
And they don't. Yeah. They don't go to the hospital. And I will never forget one of my... See, I'm talking about Onji Gregston. One of my...
I'm listening. Go ahead.
One of my consultants in ONG, he shared with us a story about a patient who was vomiting all the time. And everybody assumed that the vomiting was because of pregnancy. But she had a pancreatic tumor. So you can't assume that, you know, not that I want anybody to have pancreatic cancer, but if you're vomiting all the time, you definitely should go and get it checked out.
Exactly.
So vomiting in and of itself, you know, really isn't something that you should take lightly at all, especially in association with head trauma, as we said, and vomiting up blood and bile, vomiting up green stuff.
Right. So now that you touched on that, so lots of people will say that they're vomiting bile after you vomited. So let's say you've had nothing to eat for the last hour and a half or so, you vomited 3 times, and now you're seeing this thing that looks kind of like a green Powerade, that kind of color. Sorry, Renee. So it's like a bright greenish yellow color, and people would say that that's bile. That's not bile. That's just your stomach acid.
Bile is olive.
Bile is like a
dark green.
Like when you see it,
you can't miss bile.
That is not supposed to come up. You're not supposed to see anything like that coming out of your mouth. And so, or fecalant vomiting. Let's not go there. Okay.
Let's not.
Sometimes I just wish they could see your face when we're discussing these issues.
One of these days. So vomiting is something that we should worry about. The different types of vomiting, how often we're vomiting. And I recall there was a child, and people sometimes think that doctors don't care. And I'm going to say this, but I do think that there are still several of us who care a lot about the patients that we see. I do remember one evening when I was leaving work, literally my bag was on my shoulder and I was glad to be clocking. I happened to glance across at the other patients who would have been for the doctors coming on after me, and there was this child who was listless, who just looked as though she was about to conk out. And so I said, anybody, you took her to get checked in and whatever else? Yes. How long has she been like this? Oh, I was at the market all day, and she was at the market all day with a child who was barely responding. Mm-hmm. And I remember the nurses, everybody just ran. And we if we could have, we would have run from the clinic to the hospital with this child. So sometimes it's not glaringly obvious to people what an ill child looks like.
So we can touch on that now.
Let's go.
Okay. So the ill child, and the parents really are extremely good in identifying usually when their child is ill. If your child is not responding, and by responding, I don't necessarily mean that they're not opening their eyes or anything like that. I can get to that, but that's the extreme. But if your child usually claps hands with you or would smile if you tickle your baby and your baby has been ill and now you're tickling the baby and the baby is not laughing with you, that's a problem. It's probably because, ill children don't play. Your body's in shutdown mode. They're trying to conserve your energy. An ill child has no time to play and giggle with you. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So children who aren't, and these are cues that physicians use also. We try to interact with the child.
Right. One of the things we say is the child is not interacting with the environment. Right. So something is wrong.
So you come into the room, a child will, of a certain age, will turn its head, look at you, acknowledge your presence. An older child
pointedly ignore you in some cases.
An older child might say something, might withdraw from you. A sick child will not withdraw from you, probably will not look at you, might just glance up and then look back down, maybe close their eyes again, and you know that the child is really sick. Not eating is something that parents get very fearful of, but like all of us, that's the first thing to stop. That's one of the first most subtle signs when you're ill. So even if you've got the common cold, the first thing to go is your appetite. You just don't feel like eating. And if it's a child, it's even worse because they can't, especially in a very young child, they're unable to really verbalize that to you clearly because they can't express themselves that well. And so they're not going to tell you that, I just don't feel like eating anything or nothing quite tastes good, mommy. They're just going to refuse.
Not eat.
And a child that's refusing foods, it's not an adult that you can reason with them and say, well, I know it doesn't taste well, but you still have to eat something. Although some adults, it's even difficult to reason with them. But that child is therefore at high risk of dehydration because if they're not taking in enough, they're going to get even more sick than they are already.
And since we're on children, let's talk about asthma, because asthma is so prevalent here in our country. I'm going to take this opportunity, and we're going to go to break in just a little bit, but I'm going to put in a plug again for both adults and children knowing the names of their inhalers.
And not the colors.
Because I was just going to say that. You see, so it's not...
I didn't even know there were different colors.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
So knowing colors is good for...
It's better than nothing.
It's good for children who... Very young children who we don't expect to remember the names. So a 4-year-old, we'll accept that. If you know that your inhalers are blue and purple, and you know that you take your blue inhaler when you're really not feeling well, and your chest is feeling a bit tight, or you have difficulty breathing, and you take your purple inhaler in the morning when after you brush your teeth, and in the evening after you say your prayers, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. That's great. You get full marks for that, and we're all applauding. Everybody's happy. But if you're 40 and you're like
the blue one and the orange one,
was it the orange one? Because
I can't remember.
I used to use the brown one. But then it was a brown one. But the last one, I don't remember.
I usually sit open mouth at that time, and I say a silent prayer. Okay.
So just like we expect that your dress, it really isn't that hard, even if, and I tell people, I'm not trying to be hard on you. If you have difficulty pronouncing the medication name or remembering the exact name, it's easy. Write it on a piece of paper or tear off. What people can do is cut the box after your box. Cut the box off.
Or Makiva.
Staple the two pieces of box leaflets, the flaps together. Put that in your purse next to your ID card. Wherever you go, anywhere in the world, anybody asks you what medication are you on, you're able to whip it out and provide it to somebody.
But we're in the era of smartphones, Makiba. Everybody can take pictures of somebody being beaten, whatever else. Take pictures of your medication and you can have it to hand when you're asked. So we're not asking you to pronounce Latin and all these different things. We just need to know what your medications are. And the other thing that you need to know is, to which medications do you have an allergy? How can you not know that you're allergic to a particular drug. And it's important for your safety, because if you don't know and I give you that particular drug, then and you have a reaction, you're going to be upset with me.
Right. And vague things like it's an antibiotic really does not help, because there are lots of antibiotics. So, and usually you get that information when you're about to prescribe an antibiotic and they say, oh yes, I do have an allergy, it's an antibiotic, but I'm not sure which one it is. Now I don't want to give you anything.
Okay.
Because no, you know.
Okay, so we now have the era of being able to nebulize people at home. Mm-hmm. There are various stages, or I should say various severities of asthma. You know, you can have a mild case of asthma. I think that the what do you call it now? The
classification
has changed. But for understanding, for all intents and purposes, mild, moderate, and severe.
Yes.
And sometimes, because we can nebulize at home, persons nebulize, and then the person's come into accident and emergency near comatose.
Yeah.
On the last breath. Makiwi, you're very funny. On their last breath. So what are some of the warning signs that we should take an asthmatic to the hospital?
Before you answer that, Doc, explain to the listening public. Nebulize. I'm quite sure it's putting something over your nose or something. What's that?
Yeah, so nebulization is it's a form of making the medication aerosolized. So in terms of it being a liquid, like water, the nebulization makes it into small particles that can be easily breathed in. So it's
okay.
More like a spray.
Gets right into the airways.
Spray starch.
Right. No, I'm sorry for taking you away from the point she was asking about. If you can remember, you can go ahead and answer it. If you can't remember, she will ask you again.
All right. So where we start with asthma is education. So parents, this is huge. You have a child who's asthmatic, it is your responsibility to know every single thing you can know about asthma.
Please, teacher, may I ask?
Yes, ma'am.
I put my hand up because usually in every show, there's something that the public needs to hear again. For you, Makiba, it's that point that you just made. Please repeat for the listening public what you just said.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Parents, if your child has asthma, it is your responsibility.
Not the doctor's responsibility only,
the
or
doctor
the teacher.
Has a part, but it is your responsibility to know everything you could possibly know about asthma. And you can get this information from a wide variety of places. So if you go to the polyclinic, the nurses there at public health, the public health nurses usually do talks and educational sessions on asthma.
Most of them have asthma clinics, I think, as well.
Yeah. If you're unsure of how to use the medication, this is something you can discuss with your doctor. There are videos on YouTube also you can find with demonstrations of using the medication. The internet is a trove of information on asthma. And you should actually know the warning signs of asthma. So that's then the next part. So apart from general education about what asthma is, how it presents, why your child has asthma, all these sort of questions that you may have, then there are the critical things that you need to know.
And usually the thing that you should really be looking for is that cough, the persistent cough, even before we get to things like difficulty breathing and so on. The cough is usually the warning saying that things are going downhill.
Right. So lots of people will say, well, I don't know when my child is sick. If you have a child that's verbal, usually, and I will tell you this, over 90% of the time, children know. They know. They may not be able to express it very well, but they will know when they're not feeling well. They will tell you, even when we're nebulizing in the hospital, sometimes you can just ask the child, well, how are you feeling now? And they'll say, I'm still not feeling better. Or they may tell you, you know, I feel okay now, or I feel a lot better. And you know, but the cough is usually a dry, persistent cough. So it's not a wet sounding cough as if you have a cold.
Mm-hmm. It's something growing down there.
It's a dry cough, and it's just, you know,
persistent.
Like, you get bouts of coughing, will settle for a little bit, and then you're going to get bouts of coughing again.
It's almost like like the cough is saying, please pay attention to me. Something is going on here.
The cough is actually because in asthma, it's an inflammatory condition. The airways are getting narrowed, one, by the inflammatory mediators, and also by the swelling. So there also is swelling and increased mucus production within the airways. And that makes it really, really hard for air to get out. And the cough is to kind of force air out. of the lungs.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and in just a few moments, we're going to come out and talk with Dr. Makeba Brooks about some of those warning signs about asthma.
Fresh from fireworks.
I say this because I deal with kids every day, and I can leave here and go to them too. Mm-hmm. And this, let me know straight of it. Nah, things more direct though, dog.
Yeah.
So the music is reflective of what's happening. So you cannot not bash me, because in the past, whereas you can want a girl number, mm-hmm. and you can court she for 2 weeks mm-hmm. and 3 weeks, and mm-hmm. you go to movies, mm-hmm. and thing more direct, that is reflected in the music. So when gotcha. You say the music on the road, mm-hmm. when you say that, you got to be cognizant of the fact that these times change, you know.
Fireworks in association with West Indian Waterproofing, Armstrong Agencies Limited, and the Cost Gap. VOB 92.9 FM and VOB929.com.
The Starcom Network and Flow People's Monarch 2019 says congratulations to Leadpipe and Just Jay winning with 73% of the votes with the song Sometime.
With no further ado, we got Leadpipe and Just Jay Sometime receiving 73% of the votes. So that means that Leadpipe and Just Jay are the winners of the Starcom Network and Flow People's Monarch 2019.
And Leadpipe is actually in the building.
And he's speechless. He is speechless.
Scream out now?
Yes, you can.
Ah! Yeah! I may say! Mommy! I may say! I want to thank my fans, thank you to God. I want to thank everybody that vote, you know, via cellular phone, via laptop, or, you know, desktop, whichever you use, your preference.
Pipe, congratulations.
Thank you to the whole Pipeline team and everybody else. I promised that I wasn't going to cry.
He actually got a tear in his eye.
I don't mean nothing.
You win something today.
You win something.
People were behind you. Congratulations.
Tighty people.
The Starcom Network and Flow People's Monarch 2019 is powered by Flow. With Flow, it only gets better. Laurie Dash Craft Shop. Laurie Dash the Craft Shop, exclusively on Bay Street. Get ready for crop over at the Craft Shop. Burger King, home of the Whopper. Cave Shepherd. Cave Shepherd, own the experience. And Le Parkin for safe and secure shipping.
Okay, 28 minutes after 6, that's our time, and that means we're almost halfway through our Better Health Radio show. We've got Dr. Brooks, she's the guest of Dr. Boyce, and let's go back to the good doctors.
So we were talking just before the break, discussing with Dr. Brooks all about those warning signs of asthma. We spoke about this cough, bouts of a dry, almost irritating cough, which is the body's way to try to force air out of lungs that are closing down. And when we progress from there, where do we go?
So, well, I don't want to say progress, but different people present different ways. Mm-hmm. So you will hear some people say, yes, I have asthma, but I don't ever wheeze. I cough. That's how I know. But there's also the wheeze, which is what most people know about. And a wheeze is a whistling,
high-pitched whistle sound.
Sound that you will hear when breathing out. So if you're breathing in and you're hearing a whistling sound, that's not wheezing. Because remember, as I was saying earlier, the airways are closing in really, really tight, and it's hard to get air out. So when the air is being forced out of a small tube, that's where you get that whistling noise from. And obviously there's also chest tightness or congestion, people just feeling like their chest is
closing in,
as they would say.
Then I remember posturing, the different positions that
That, especially when you have children, you can actually look at the area just above the breastbone. So there's a soft area just above the breastbone at the base of your neck, if you just trace from by your breastbone in the center of your chest right up to your neck, you get to that soft area. That area is where you can see what we call tracheal tugging. And so it kind of looks like this, Gregson. Can you see it sucking in?
I'm looking. Ah, I see it now. Yes, I see
so
it now.
So if you try to breathe in really deeply, without breathing it, it's hard to describe. But anyway,
just in case the listeners are wondering what was going on, you were trying to show me by example what you were looking for on a patient in your examination room.
That's correct. So as a parent, you can look in that area.
And the ribs as well.
If you see that area sucking in, because if you look at yourself or your child breathing, normally there's no sucking there. You don't see that area being depressed or drawn in really deeply. But a child who's in distress, you will see that really coming in deeply,
And the nostrils flare.
And the nostrils will flare because the child is really trying to get air in. Most maximal effort to get air in and out as best as possible. They would also have sucking in between your ribs. So if you lift the child's shirt up, you will see that the skin between the ribs is pulling in every time the child tries to breathe. And also older children and adults will develop a posture much like this, where they will put their hands on their knees, kind of leaning their chest forward. And that is also to open up your chest wall as much as you possibly can. And it's actually something that they do unconsciously. It's not that they're purposely adopting this posture. It is really just the body is telling you, you need to do something, but you need to get air in and you need to get air out fast.
So when you see these things, tracheal tugging and the ribs drawing in and picking up a particular position, you need to worry. You need to worry even more in the child who is still and quiet.
Right.
Who is having an asthma attack, because you are clearly in danger then.
Yeah. So the at-home treatment for asthma, and asthma can be managed at home, mild attacks can be. So there we have to go to say, well, how do you know it's a mild attack? Well, every child should have a peak flow meter.
Oh dear.
That's another thing to repeat, right?
Yes.
Every child should have something called a peak flow meter. It's a small device. It's like a cylinder, maybe about the size of a standard toothpaste box, but round instead of square base. And you suck in air through it, and it measures the speed in which the amount of air that's traveling in a minute. So it gives you a value in liters per minute, saying, well, you can forcefully suck in 350 liters a minute, or whatever, you know, or 200 liters a minute. It gives a value. You should have one at home for your child. It can be bought at a pharmacy. And what you do is, when your child is well, absolutely well, nothing is wrong, you test it. Get them to do it 3 times. You take the best of the 3. And you say, good, this is your maximum. This is when you are good. So that day you come to me after running and playing football, and you come and you say, mommy, my chest is a bit tight, you know, I don't feel quite well. I bring out my peak flow and I give it to you and I say, go ahead, try again. Let's see how you're doing now. And again, we do 3 and get an average. And then actually on your asthma action card, I don't know if the polyclinics are still giving them out. Okay, so you should have an asthma action card, which tells you that if you're in 70 to 75% of your maximum, this is a mild attack. If you're in 50% of your maximum, this is a moderate attack. And if you're less than that,
you should have been at the hospital ever since.
You need to be running, you know? But it's only with education of yourself as a parent that you can then better manage your child's asthma. Because the management of the asthma is really not going to be the physician, because the physician is not living with your child. You are. So you're the one to do all the preventative things to make sure there's no carpet in the house, or the
stuffed
animals
toys
don't come, the stuffed toys, you know, there's regular cleaning and all the other things that your child might be allergic to. People harp a lot on yellow number 5 and yellow number 6.
Yes. But actually, the dust on the fan.
Exactly. Majority of asthma is actually not triggered by food allergies. That's a very, very small percentage. Most of it is actually household allergies. Pet dander,
dust mites,
huge, roaches, etc.
We have a call. Let's take that call. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Dr. Boyce, good evening to you and your guests.
Hi, good evening.
I'm Mr. Gregston.
Yes, sir.
Doc, this is your resident caller.
Yes, I recognize. How are you?
I'm fine. Look, I got 2 questions to ask, and then I want to make a suggestion. The first question is this. Are there any portable devices that a parent can take around in her wallet, apart from the inhaler, that can help a child want to have a sudden asthma attack, something similar to the cylinder that the girly doctor was just speaking about, that you can apply with the tube into the nose until such time as you get to a doctor or hospital? Is there that kind of equipment?
No, there is. I mean, there is your rescue inhaler, which is the
blue.
it's a bronchodilator. It causes the airways to dilate or get wider to allow for air to pass through. And that is available in an inhaler form, and it's also available in a nebulized form. If you had a portable nebulizer, perhaps you can use it. But something to note,
the portable nebulizer is what I was really talking about.
But the portable nebulizers, I'd be hard pressed to find one that is battery operated. I'm sure there are some available, but an important thing to note is that the nebulizer, the dosage of the medication put into the nebulizer is the exact same dosage of medication that you get from your
inhaler.
So people think inhalers don't work, I need to get nebulized, and it's actually the exact same thing. How nebulizers are better is for the person who is unable to actually use, because you're so sick, you actually can't coordinate your breathing to use the inhaler, and so therefore you can use a nebulizer. But even for young children, we still recommend that they use the nebulizers. They just have to add something called a spacer.
Use the inhalers.
They just have to add something called a spacer device to it, which is also something you can pick up at the pharmacy.
The other question I would like to ask is, if a person, in this case an adult, suffers with as he usually have or she usually have asthma attacks, and they have an asthma attack, say in town, can they walk or get to the hospital, however they can, and go straight into accident emergency and apply the equipment themselves?
And apply it themselves? No. Because it's medication, and obviously it has to be prescribed by a doctor. There is a standard, a running prescription that the doctors will use, and therefore the nurses are able to nebulize you based on your signs and symptoms when you present, without you having to be seen by a doctor first. But no, patients cannot go into accident emergency and start their own treatment.
I have seen it already though.
Where somebody
I have seen it already.
What medication, where did they get it?
Well, they went to the back there where those people are nebulized.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have those tanks and those hoses and stuff.
Yes.
Fellow walked straight through the door. I went and put one in his nose. And he was breathing really hard. So I thought, well, maybe he know the drill, so he can do that.
Maybe he left and came back, because that's also a possibility. I mean, some of our asthmatics that visit accident emergency, we have lots of...
frequent flyers?
Lots of people who come quite often. And this is somebody who may have been nebulized, stepped outside to take a telephone call or to get something to eat, and may just be returning, going back to his particular seat with his medication. They're waiting for him. That's also a possibility. But the medication, the tubing that you see there tends not to be pre-filled with medication, just sitting there waiting. When a patient comes in and there is a immediate release from the door, if you present and you're an asthmatic in distress or having an asthma attack, you're immediately allowed access into the emergency department, and you can present to the asthma bay where you will be assessed by a nurse and your medication started.
Dr. Boyce?
Yes, please.
This is a suggestion now.
Sure, go ahead.
I would like to see this program rebroadcast at night. You know, like how you have Brass Tacks rebroadcast at night?
Yes.
This program is so interesting that we need to have 2 bites of the cherry.
Okay, so what I will do is take your suggestion to management, and we will see how we can facilitate your request in the shortest possible time.
And we want it before Brass Tacks, because this is much more important. Not that Brass Tacks is not important, but this kind of program is very educational, and you can learn a lot from it, enough to save your life, actually.
Yes, that's why we're having this discussion today.
Pardon?
That's why we're having this discussion on when to worry, emergency medicine.
Only today, all the programs that you come with, it's very educational. So, Gregston, you can speak to management. I have it broadcast. even if you start at 11 o'clock and finish at 12, and then the call-in program starts at the usual time at 12 o'clock. But I think this needs to be rebroadcast. It's too good to just have it one hour in the evening, and then you go wait the next Sunday.
Okay.
It needs to be rebroadcast.
I'm quite sure word will get back to them.
I hope so, Greg. So I hope so.
All right, anyway, my friend.
Guys, you have a great evening.
Okay, you too.
Thanks. Take care.
Much.
All right. All right, Don, go ahead.
We lost the other call?
No, just one.
It was just one. I thought we had another call. So we were talking about asthma, and we were talking about education of asthma, and we are going to have a program on asthma itself. And the next thing we're going to talk about after we take this call is going to be heart attacks and strokes. When should we worry in the community? So let's take this call.
Right. I said one, right? No, we've got two now. Yes, please. Go right ahead.
Good evening.
I couldn't agree with the caller more. I agree with him 100%. It need to be rebroadcast.
Okay, thank you so very much.
You are welcome.
Okay, well, I'm quite sure they will hear that too as well. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Dr. Boyce.
Hi, good evening. Good evening. Hey,
good evening.
Yeah. There's a real good program. I like it.
Okay.
And
thank you.
My son had asthma, right?
Yes.
When he was about 10, and he only had 2 asthma attacks, and he never had a next one. No, he's 28. He's 16 for this month.
Oh, so you were one of the fortunate ones.
That's really good.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you take care. Thanks for calling.
Yes.
Thank you. Before you continue discussion on heart attacks and strokes, can you outgrow asthma, one, or can it be cured entirely, two?
Can you outgrow asthma? Yes-ish.
Yes, it's because she said 10 years old, 2 attacks, and now he's 28, never had one since.
Which is not uncommon, but we can't say that he will never have another one.
Exactly.
So then there's no cure then?
No, not really. So it is a chronic inflammatory disease. If you stay away from your triggers, or your body becomes better in handling your triggers, because really what asthma is a, as if your immune system to allergens or inhaled allergens is hyperactive.
Has gone mad.
So instead of me, I don't have asthma, and I will go into a dusty closet and pull out a sweater today.
And come into the studio sneezing.
And sneeze.
She should have gone into
She did.
And sneeze. Somebody will with asthma will not just sneeze 10 times and that be it. Mm-hmm. They might sneeze. They might start to cough. They may get chest tightness. They may start to wheeze because they get an explosion of their... of the reaction of their immune system to those allergens. Instead of a small reaction, they get a big boof.
Right, so you understand triggers now, right? I'm talking to listeners. Of course, they understand what triggers are now. All right, go ahead, please.
Somebody sent us a message on WhatsApp saying that there are portable chargers which can be charged. And we know about the ones that can be plugged into a main electrical source. So there are those... chargers, those nebulizers that are available.
And so the thing is, we heard you said chargers, so we didn't say anything.
Yes, I was probably thinking about the phone. What was I saying now? So these portable nebulizers are available, so you'll have to do some research into how you can acquire one. But I think I remember the lament of one of the doctors who was saying that people are a little too... They depend too much on the ability to nebulize at home and they present too late. So again, our advice is to look out for these warning signs and make sure that you don't take too long to get to accident and emergency or another emergency center of your choice.
And also to a nebulizer, setting up a nebulizer takes significantly more time than it does to just
uncap an inhaler.
Uncap your inhaler and give 2 puffs. That's seconds versus at least probably a minute. Because you have to unpack the nebulizer from wherever it is. You have to set it up on a flat surface. You have to get the medication, put it into the nebulizer, start it. It will then start to mist, and then you have to sit there. Nebulizer also takes, that one dose takes about 20 minutes to administer, whereas the one dose of your inhaler takes seconds. So
we're talking about the importance of time. Let's talk about time is myocardium.
Okay, so yes.
Myocardium is heart muscle.
Yes.
So we're on to heart attacks and strokes.
Attacks and strokes now. We've segued from the lungs and we've gone. We are not like
we're
certain people.
Haven't gone too far.
You are having a ball, aren't you?
We are not like certain people who talk about the kidneys being dear to the heart.
I'm lost on that one.
A person of great importance on the world stage said that the kidneys have a very important place in the heart.
Are we talking about Trump again? This isn't Trump, is it?
So
let's not.
Oh, it is Trump. Okay. So
let's talk, Dr. Brooks, about... I'm trying to regain composure here, but it's so difficult. We're talking about strokes. I might have one laughing so much.
So we can start with chest pain.
Yes, let's do that. I'm having chest pain.
So chest pain can be caused by a variety of conditions. So one thing to remember is that because your chest is hurting doesn't mean it's something background is with your lungs. So there are lots of other structures that can present with chest pain.
Yes, from skin all the way down to all the organs that are inside the chest cavity.
And some that are outside the chest
cavity.
Yes,
referred pain. Yes.
So you can have a stomach issue and you actually present with chest pain. And it has nothing to do with your lungs, which most people would be thinking about when they have chest pain. Things to worry about when you have chest pain associated with abdominal pain, that's a warning sign. Chest pain with feeling faint, chest pain with abnormal heartbeats or palpitations, what we would say. So normally, which most people should know, I found out in medical school, that normally you are not supposed to have an awareness of your heartbeat. You're sitting there and you actually can't tell if your heart is beating. We know your heart is beating because you're alive, but you actually can't say for sure that your heart is beating because you don't have an awareness of it.
That is so true.
Palpitations is the opposite of that. Palpitations is the awareness of your heartbeat. So you're sitting there and you can feel your heart by the pounding out of your chest because it's beating fast, beating hard, or beating slow.
Yes.
So people have palpitations, they always think about your heart racing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that. If you are aware that your heart is beating, that's not normal and that's something that should be checked out.
So we're going to take this call. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. I think that information like this that is so technical and medical information, etc., is not readily absorbed by the mind, except you have a historian brain like Gregson Seeley. So I just want to say that, yes, I think it should be a rebroadcast. And I just want to tell you, doctors, that Gregson Seeley sitting before you has the authority to rebroadcast it.
Oh, dear.
And there you have it.
Now, I will just jump in here very quickly.
Please do.
And say a good evening to the gentleman on the line. I know him very well. He usually sits in the very chair I'm sitting in.
Is that right?
Yes. He is next to the radio manager. When he's not around the radio manager, he's in charge. So it behooves me as to why he's saying that I have the authority when he can make it happen like that. Mr. Husbands, good evening to you, sir.
Good evening.
Oh, hello, Ken.
You know, to be fair, he's one of the listeners who has made favorable comments about the program. He likes it. He will tell you that because he's right on the line. He's told me that. And I'm not surprised that he's listening. So nice to have you, Ken.
Yes, I hope he's listening. I remember for when my husband and I got married way back when, there used to be a program with DaCosta Mannings at the time.
Ken
and Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to our apartment. We were living in Edge Hill at the time. And they sang for us and they presented us with the gifts from our registry. So I have never forgotten that. So hi, Ken.
Hi, good evening.
Yes.
Good evening to you.
Thank you for listening.
Okay, and I do think that I have not met y'all. I think the program is really, really good. And I want to repeat that this technical information, unless you have an Albert Einstein's brain like my good friend Gregson, you don't remember. You understand the language as you go on. But once the program is done, you know, your body, your mind does not absorb it for reproduction, much less for practical uses. So it should be repeated.
Okay, and we thank you for that vote of confidence. It really does, it really has, according to the old people, it really blessed my heart.
If you could see her face, Ken, just to hear you calling, I tell you, what?
So we are talking. Oh, you're still there, Ken. I didn't know that you were still there. So do keep listening.
I've heard all of that. I'll drop in one Sunday afternoon with all of you.
Yes, all right, that would be wonderful.
Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Have a good week ahead.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
So we were talking, Makiba, about chest pain. So we said that chest pain we should worry about would be palpitations, and that palpitations are not necessarily only your heart beating quickly, but just maybe a more powerful beat and sometimes beating too slowly.
Yes.
Yes. We have another call. Let's take that call. Sorry, good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm enjoying your show. Well, I would like it to come through like at night when everybody's, you know, home and resting. Because I'm sure it's very, very, very interesting.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so very much for calling and lending that vote of confidence.
I hope that you will get to broadcast it at night.
Yes, please.
Okay, thanks. I'm continuing to listen to you all.
Okay, thank you very much. We're on to chest pain.
Good night.
Good night.
I will love the show that night. I will love it because I love to hear Dr. Boyce and Mr. Grayson. See, it's very educational. It's important. It's everything. I just love it. But Grayson, I have to be because I just love to hear Grayson and Dr. Boyce. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, too.
Thank you kindly, ma'am.
You're so sweet.
This is Dr. Boyce you're talking about?
You're sweet.
Oh, okay, then I'm going to feel a bit special sweet. Here now. Give me a chance. Let me tap myself on the back. Woohoo!
I just love to hear you. So you make a good team. I would just love to hear it.
Thank you, ma'am. You have a good evening.
Take care and get home safely.
Thanks. All right. Seems like we've got a... If you could see how the good doctor's looking at me, like, wait a minute. Dr. Boyce.
Yes, please.
It seems like your program is doing very well. I'm going to echo Ken's sentiment. I'm going to try to inquire to Mr. Anthony Green if there is some way that they can have it replayed at some time of the evening after the usual broadcast time is finished, the manual broadcast time is finished. I don't know what day, if they can do it, if they will do it, but we will certainly ask.
Sure, no problem at all.
Wonderful. You were talking about heart and stroke.
We were trying to talk.
Okay, go ahead.
About chest pain in the last 8 minutes that we have.
So I need to now rush. Okay, so...
Well, whatever we cover, I'm sure that it would be enough.
Chest pain.
And don't worry, there's always an invitation to come on back.
I always say it.
You will bring a sweater by two this time.
Definitely.
Okay.
Chest pain associated with dizziness or nausea. So nausea is... one of the things that people mean when they say they have bad feels. Now, bad feels in Barbados, Gregston, can mean
anything.
A plethora of things. So it can mean anything from I feel hungry to I feel as if I'm about to pass out. And anything in between there is bad feels.
That's just like the stomach. The stomach for the average Barbadian is anywhere from the neck down to the pelvis. Anything in there is stomach. We have another call, Bakiba.
Okay, let's go.
Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening, Dr. Boyce.
Hello, good evening.
Dr.
Brooks.
Brooks?
Hi,
I'm Mr. Gregson Seeley.
Yes, just before you go on, you don't mind turning your radio down? We're getting a little bit of feedback.
Sorry, don't even thought about that.
That's quite okay.
Anyway, I don't miss this program for anything.
Oh, thank you very much.
Do what I have if there's anything to make sure I'm here by 6. But I have been saying for the longest time, we don't ever get anything educational during the week on the radio. And there are lots of people who are not up at night at this time to be listening to the program, because they're working people. But there's so many people who tune into Brass Tacks during the day at work. I'm sure it would be better, realize, if it's done during the day when more people are up and about.
Okay, that is a very useful suggestion as well. Another take on it. That is true.
So yeah, we're going to... you have to stay up to listen to it, but you want to stay up to listen to it. But I don't think the people who stay up to listen to the Brass Tacks at night, maybe these are the people who don't do the night work. You understand?
Yes.
But I think it's already a daytime thing. It would be more appreciated during the day.
Okay, well, we'll take that into management as well.
And thank you.
Yes, please. Thank you for calling.
Have a good evening. Doc,
yes.
Thank you. Doc, I promise I won't interrupt you anymore. We've got a couple more minutes left, and even if you don't finish what you're about to say, we'll give you a couple more minutes to finish up. All right?
You.
So go right ahead, please.
You're so gracious. So pain, chest pain associated with dizziness or nausea or feeling, that feeling where you feel your stomach feels upset, you feel like you maybe want to vomit or throw up. Chest pain that's spreading to the arms or to the jaw. So for some people, they have a heart attack and they actually just have this very vague feeling, chest pain, and it's seeming to be coming down their arm. Usually down the left arm, but it can be down the right arm too. So
sorry, Gregston.
Don't ignore that pain.
And I usually think that if it's the right, you're good. Now you should understand it can be a right as well. Anyway, go ahead.
And excessive sweating. So if you're having chest pain and you're sweating and you're not outside doing, hot and you should be sweating, then that is definitely a huge, huge red flag.
I do remember coming across a patient who was she wasn't having a heart attack. I think she was having a dissection of her aorta, the large vessel. And the only thing she had was excess sweating.
Yeah.
She wasn't having chest pain which is not typical because that usually comes with pain, but she was the sweat was just dripping off of her.
Well, now that you mention that, that's actually something that we are taught in medical school, and I'm not sure if it still is, but I really hope it is. But that's the one thing your patient can't fake. They can't fake sweat.
That is true.
They cannot. So if you are in severe pain or you are having a heart attack, you probably are going to be sweating, and it's not just, oh, I feel a little hot.
Yeah,
you're drenched in sweat.
Yes, like it's not a mist across your forehead.
It's like, you know, it's really, really profuse. And it's, again, it's not something that they can fake. So if you see that, something is wrong. Even if you can't yet find out what's wrong, something is wrong, and something very critical too.
So if you experience this, your next course of action is straight to the hospital.
Yes. An emergency department, live and direct.
Same thing for strokes. As well.
Yes. So there is a, I have to squeeze this in. Yes, there is a stroke protocol in place at the hospital, which means that if you present within an hour of having symptoms of a stroke, you can actually be given a medication that can help reverse the symptoms of your stroke.
Depending on the type of stroke, because there's more than
depending
one kind.
Depending on the type of stroke, right. So, but you must present within an hour.
So time is of the essence.
Time is of the essence. And in that case, you don't necessarily need to come by ambulance. If you call and there's no ambulances available and you have a weakness on the right side of your body or left side of your body, you need to just get, or slurring of your speech, or
you can't
acute
walk.
Confusion. You can't walk, you're just feeling weak. You need to get to the accident emergency department however you can, even if you need to catch a bus, because
yes,
you will get there within the hour. But you just need to get there fast.
And I think one of the things that I am proud of as a Barbadian would be our bus drivers, minibuses, transport board buses, and so on and so forth, who bring ill people to the hospital. You know, they take the other people off the bus and they try to somebody who's ill. You know, I am proud as a Bajan.
Using all of our resources. I mean, the ambulance is really for persons who are, it's not just a transportation vehicle. You know, it's not a taxi, it's not a drop in town, as some people apparently have used it for in the past. And so, you know, that's when you utilize your neighbors, your other relatives, and you say, look, I need to get my mom to the hospital, you
quick
know?
Fast and in a hurry,
please. Can you take them for me, you know?
I think if we had more time, you would discuss the safe way of transporting people who are ill, people who might have fallen, people who might have had head injuries and so on, accidents, and going to the scene of accidents and trying to be helpful and doing more damage than help. You know, we're still a very caring society, even though sometimes it really doesn't seem that way.
Sure.
But we are going to be winding down. So let's go over those take home points.
I want to just squeeze
in it right in, Makiba.
I'm squeezing something.
Go right ahead.
Sorry, Gregston.
That's all right.
No, we have a few minutes. He's given us
a
few
extra time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I want to touch on women primarily.
Oh, we had a gynecologist in the other day. Dr. Barker was in, and we briefly touched on post-menopausal bleeding.
Good. So that's one thing.
Yes. So let's talk about breast.
Right. So post-menopausal bleeding, which is just as it says, it's vaginal bleeding anytime after menopause. So menopause being that your periods have ceased for at least a year. And any bleeding that you get after that is abnormal and needs to be checked out. Full stop.
Correct.
Right. Also, any discharge from your nipple in a woman who is not lactating. Not breastfeeding. So you're not pregnant and soon about to be lactating.
Yes.
I mean, soon about to be breastfeeding, or you're not presently breastfeeding, or you haven't just stopped breastfeeding, like you're weaning your baby or anything like that. If you're 60 and you have a discharge from your nipple, we know you didn't just have a child, and you're not pregnant, no, that is a problem.
Mm-hmm. And don't ignore lumps. I can see the face of a lady right now who had a lump. You know, sometimes I just have to sit and shake my head. Who had a lump in her breast? It was a palpable lump. So it's not like a small one picked up on screening. This was something that you could see. And she thought something bit her.
Well, to be honest, and a lot of Barbadians, especially older women who have breast cancer, do always liken it, or end up feeling a mass, do always link it to
a centipede bite.
Time that they got knocked on the breast.
The
like
lady
a door,
with, got
a
hit
door
with an ironing board.
Exactly. And, you know, the jury's still out to whether or not small amounts of trauma can then predispose to malignant changes in cells. Don't know.
But the fact that there is a lump there that shouldn't be there,
That's a problem.
So yeah. It's not necessarily a reason for you to go to accident and emergency. We're just talking generally about things to worry.
Things that you should present to your doctor.
But you should find your doctor quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Now talking about older people, oftentimes it's thought that older people are supposed to start losing their mental faculties, and that's not true.
That's
so correct. Just because you're old doesn't mean you have to start losing your mental faculties.
I thought you had an excuse.
So that's something also. So if you notice this in yourself, or you notice this in your parents or your grandparents, that they are now forgetting things, and sometimes the forgetting is, it's not just forgetting where they put their keys, but forgetting that they had a conversation with you yesterday. Like they would see you today and say, I haven't seen you in 3 weeks. You didn't come to look for me at all. And you said, but Gran, I came here yesterday. Yesterday you didn't come. That's a problem. And it's not something that should be taken lightly.
And the other thing is changes in personality as well. Right. Because somebody, for example, there was a lady who we used to see in clinic all the time, and she was very friendly and got along well with everybody. But this one particular day, and I think she had fallen too, and she went to the pharmacy, and her behavior was just uncharacteristic of this pleasant old lady. Well, we shipped her to the hospital with suspected...
a bleed.
Yeah, suspected head trauma. Because her behavior was not typical for her, you know, knowing her personality and seeing her in the clinic. So changes in behavior as well.
Right. Fever in the elderly, also a big thing. So because you are, we know that infections are worse in persons at the extremes of ages, so very young and the very old, it's harder for them to get over infections. So if you have a fever, or you know somebody who's elderly who has a fever, you need to get them to the doctor or get a doctor to see them as soon as possible.
Anything else you want to squeeze in?
Confusion, we spoke about that. We touched a little bit about that.
On confusion.
And I was going to ask you about that. You said confusion was part of sign of a stroke or something?
Well, it can be a sign of a brain injury or an intracranial. So some pathology or something that's going on inside of the head. Mm. So it can be from head trauma. It could be from a tumor that's resting on a certain part of the brain and then causing you to be confused.
And then there are other things like maybe having taken too much medication.
That too.
Infections in the elderly.
Infections.
Chest infections, bladder infections in the elderly can cause confusion. And heart attacks in the elderly, they might not present with that typical crushing chest pain. They might just be a little woozy and confused.
Yeah. I'm glad you explained that to me, because I was looking for a reason as to understand why the same gentleman you spoke to earlier, Ken Husbands, is usually so kerfuffled at Domino's. He's usually confused by two, confused squared. I just had to throw that one in.
We're not there with you. That's above our pay grade. So, Dr. Brooks, let's summarize the important things you want persons to take home.
There's so many.
Apart from the fact that the show needs to be repeated.
Apart from that. So there's so many, but I think the major point is that there are lots of subtle signs and symptoms that you can see, and you should be aware that these things could mean something else.
But I think...
Use your gut. I think, you know, your intuition should not be... put aside, because generally you know when something isn't right. Even if you don't know what's wrong, you know that something isn't quite right. And at that time you can either get the person to a doctor or have a doctor come out to them. And right now, I mean, in the era that we're in now, outpatient management medicine is huge. You would know that from your practice, where doctors are now going into your homes and seeing you at your home, and they can do a host of things. I mean, all the things that you can get done
in the office.
At a doctor's office. Mm-hmm. ECGs, ultrasounds, blood tests that you get back the results in minutes without having to go to a lab, nebulizing, stitches, complex examinations, which can then take you further if you need, you know, further CAT scans or whatever else. Even x-rays now are being done at home. So, I mean,
Medicine
is evolving. So the thing is really that you notice that something is wrong, and you just know the person needs to get help. Everything doesn't need the emergency room, and that's where you can lean on your family physician to let them know, well, these are the symptoms that I'm seeing. What should I do from here?
So, yeah, sorry about that. We were having a little technical issue here in the studio. We've been talking to Dr. Makeba Brooks, one of my good friends and colleagues, same class in medical school. It has been a pleasure talking to you this evening, Makeba. You and your allergies. Yes, the whole world now knows that Makeba has allergies. If you didn't know before.
Now you do.
Yes. She's been here sneezing off her head in studio. I've been laughing at her. But you have been listening to the Better Health Radio Show. We were discussing this evening with Dr. Makeba Brooks, an emergency medicine specialist, about the things that you need to worry about. We're looking forward to being back with you next week. And as usual, even although I look at the program, I am not certain of who's scheduled for next week. Not because of inefficiency, but simply because of age.
I just cannot
remember. I can't remember, but it's going to be a great show. I am quite convinced of that fact. And Gregson, please make sure that the temperature is not sub-zero as it is this evening. And it's not only me that complained, because Makeba was here slurring.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will apologize on this weekend, because it had our good doctor here in a spot of bother here. And when it comes to our guests, I am a little bit sad if they're uncomfortable. Sorry. If it's you, you are part of the team. So, you know, you can just roll with it.
You can sit there, guys, and say that to me, and I'm not to feel crushed. Anyhow, the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. Tune in next week, 6 to 7, and if we get our wish sometime else, you'll be able to hear us too. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.